Well, Cody, really glad to have you on here today. And for folks who are listening in, you just wanted to do a quick introduction of yourself and who you're with and kind of give us a little bit of background.
Sure. I'm Cody Garris. I live in Lamar, Missouri, and I would say heavily vested in the cattle business. We own and operate an operation here on our own family deal, cow-calf deal, and keep some registered Brangus females and ultra black females here, and then a pretty large stocker and backgrounder deal. And then in addition to that, I run a marketing alliance called Gene Plus Brangus, where we sell about 400 bulls a year across the country, from coast to coast, and through a couple production sales, one in the spring, one in the fall, and then sell a lot of bulls and females, both private treaty as well. So
Very good. So I know every seed stock producer out there is kind of getting involved or has been involved, maybe is a better way of putting it, in genetic testing and genomically enhanced EPDs and all of this extra data we have beyond just the visual evaluation. And with this article, we're kind of looking at how can producers understand, trust, utilize all the information available. So if you want to start off by sharing how, in your experience, you've seen genetic testing impacting or changing the way that bull buyers select their seed stock.
sure. I think when we talk about, breeding cattle and selecting seed stock, I guess breeding cattle as cattle breeders ourselves, and then as bull purchasers come to select seed stock, probably the number one thing to me is consistency. And so I think that we want a consistent product, across. I've joked with people before, if it's our sale or somebody else's sale, I don't care. If there's 150 bulls in the offering and you find two or three or four that you think fit for you, you're at the wrong sale. And so I think from the so, so when you get back, tie that back to genomically enhanced CPDs and some things, or in really the big picture of the data, for us it's about balance and consistency. And I think, adding the strength of genomically enhanced EPDs adds to that consistency, adds to that predictability, to where we can know that this yearling bull, we can raise this yearling bull's accuracy up from, say, a 0.15 to a 0.35 or whatever it may be through genomically enhanced EPDs through genetic testing, and have more faith that he's sure enough going to be a calve in these bull, or he's sure enough going to be a bull that maybe hits in the top 10% for this trade or that trade or whatever it may be. But I think it's a there's no such thing as the end all be all in the toolbox that we have, as far as one single tool. But I think it's a great thing to package up with everything else we have, just to kind of add to that predictability.
Yeah, that's something we're seeing more and more of, it seems like, even on the phenotype side. You have some of these producers, and based upon their breeding program, whether it is AI or ET work, so many of these essentially half siblings or half bull mates, they're so consistent. You almost have a hard time picking out which one is going to be the one to work for you because you've got 12 or 15 bulls that genetically and phenotypically are very, very similar, obviously with their own individual variation. But it seems like that's something that is becoming much more prevalent in any cell that you go to, is just finding bulls across the board that would work for you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think in some places, and I think even more so. I mean, it kind of separates the men from the boys a little bit, because I think there still are some places, that, and it probably depends on breed type too. I mean, I think you go to an Angus, a set of Angus bulls, there's this type of consistency, and maybe you go look at a set of Sim-Angus bulls, or in our instance, a set of ultra black and Brangus bulls, you see this consistency or maybe inconsistency. So yeah, no, I think it, and I think when you talk about, guys doing some ET work and different things and full sibs, I mean, there again, I think it shows what cows, there's a lot of cows out there getting flushed, that maybe are getting flushed a little early,
Sure.
and as far as the consistency of their production. And so, you know, when you see some of those guys, some of those cows that maybe have gotten flushed that didn't maybe need to get flushed quite yet, and the, you know, the result of the progeny is up and down versus this cow, you know, here that you know, bang, everyone's cookie cutter the same. You know, we sold last spring in our sale, we had a set of three flush brothers. There was only three of them. We didn't call any. I mean, there was three to start with, and there was three to end with out of one cow. And anyway, we end up selling them. When we sorted them before the sale, I thought, man, they look pretty good, you know, but we'll see where they shake out. Anyway, we end up selling them in our sale order, like second, third, and fourth. And the first one brings 25,000 to a purebred producer. The second one brings 24,000 to a purebred producer. The third one brings 23,000 to a purebred producer, you know, and that's kind of like you're saying. I mean, the phenotype wise, you know, they were so much the same, and genetic wise. So anyway, but no, I think at the end of the day, why we want to utilize all the tools we got in the toolbox, whether it's genomically enhanced DPDs or ET work or, you know, AI, whatever it may be. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel like the usage of that data has taken a while to kind of adopt with the buyers over the last, let's say, 5, 8 years compared to what they were used to traditionally using to select bulls?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but man, I'm going to tell you, I think our, we talk about this internally a lot. I think our commercial bull buyer base is sharper than most seed stock producers. You know, I
Really?
mean, once they grab a hold of it, you know, they know what they want and they go after it. And yeah, I'd say in the last 5 years, I mean, we've seen a huge difference in the way guys are selecting bulls. You know, they're going through, they're getting their catalog and going through and selecting the bulls on paper. And then they'll come to the sale and, or, you know, look at our videos and evaluate them, you know, visually and, you know, check a few more on or off or whatever that may be. But yeah, they're really, they've really seems like it did, you know, we think about, you know, selling bulls 20 years ago and, you know, everybody wanted at that time, everybody wanted to know what the bull's birth weight was. You know, I don't care about I don't care about EPDs. I just want it. What was his birth weight, you know? And now, man, I mean, the guys are really good. The commercial, like say commercial producers especially are really good students of the process and evaluating, and I think it's key. You know you can really see those guys that know what their program, you know what their goals are and what their program needs, and drill down and go get it. So
It's funny that you mentioned the birth weight there, because I think there's still guys that that's like their number one question, is what's the
oh
birth
sure
weight?
yep
And we could talk all day about how little that may tell you about that animal with everything else that you know about the animal, but it still humors me how we still want to know what the real numbers are. And I say real numbers, but what the production numbers were, but acknowledging that that's not the whole story.
Right. No, for sure. Yeah, and there's always going to be, yeah, I mean, I think always going to be a segment that way, but no, that's for sure. And you know, you talk about like raw data and raw information. You know, we quit printing. We do still print a birth weight, because people ask for it, and we do still print an adjusted scrotal, adjusted yearling scrotal measurement. But those are the only two measurements, I guess I would say we print. You know, and we have it available, you know, for people online and you know, as a sales supplement if they want it. But you know, as far as what we print in the catalog, it's all EPDs. So EPDs and percentile rankings, because I think it's just a lot better measuring tool for future prediction. So.
So if you've got a guy, and this is going a little off tangent, but I think it's a good point to make, that does care about birth weight, weaning weight, yearling weight, maybe they just have a goal of what they wanted to produce in their herd. How do you tell those guys to utilize and analyze the genetic data, even if they can't see, well, this calf weaned off at 700 pounds, just in their mind, how do they process that?
Right. And I think to me, rankings within a breed show us more than the raw EPDs themselves, you know. So, and so we'll publish those. So we'll, like in our catalog, for instance, we show the row of EPDs and then right below them, the percentile rankings within the respective breed. And so that's where I'll take, you know, if you call me and say, hey, I need a Cavanese bull that's going to be above average growth for wean and above average growth for yearling, you know, I'm going to say go find a bull that's top 35% or better for CED, birth weight, wean and weight, and yearling weight, or whatever it may be, But anyway, so that's probably where we tend to kind of gear people more towards, because I feel like the percentile ranking deal, everybody can, we get a lot of people, for instance, come over from buying Angus bulls, now want to buy an ultra black bull, and the EPDs aren't equivalent, the raw wean and weight to wean and weight, but percentile rankings are percentile rankings, and so I think it makes it easier to understand those EPDs through that percentile ranking process, and probably tells us, gives us
Yeah.
a better measuring stick. So.
Makes a lot of sense. Are there common tests that you guys have used or you've seen buyers look at in terms of their genetic testing or just how those EPDs are analyzed?
Common test, you say?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, so like our, there's been times, where there's maybe been a genetic condition, in different breeds. It's, typically about all, started in the Angus breed and then filtered down to the rest of us. But, so if there's a, DD or something, when some of those kind of fads, if you will, were passing through, someone would ask that. But for the most part, everybody's running, maybe a 30K or 50K or 100K, genomically enhanced genetic test, and so it's all pretty standard, I would say, from there. I don't see a lot of people, requesting anything other than that. I'd say you get into some other, for what we do, I'd say you get into some other breeds where maybe horns are more prevalent or there's more color variation, and you probably get into more add-ons to some of those genetic tests. But
What do you guys personally use? Do you guys do the 30, 50, 100? What's kind of your preference?
yeah, so most of those bulls will run through the 30, and then that, essentially extrapolates up up the chain from there. But yeah, and maybe on some of those front end AI, potential AI sires and stuff, we may run something a little bigger, but for the most
Gotcha.
part, a 30. Yep. So.
Is there any methodology behind doing a 30 versus a 50 or 100?
So it basically, not now, I don't know that it tells you a lot more, in the beginning, when we didn't, I mean, so basically, genomically, these genetic tests are roadmaps, more or less. And so when we didn't have as many roads mapped, if you will, the more 100K tests we ran, the better off the whole population was, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever. But now, as we've, got more data, more information, and we can take that. Basically, we can take that 30K test and extrapolate it out to a 250K, if you will. It's essentially telling us the same thing. So I'd say, like, say, except with the exception of some of those, maybe extra special animals, I think it covers the gamut for a little bit more of a nominal price. So.
Would you go so far as to say that utilization of this technology over time has made it to where not as much data is needed because you're better selecting the genetics, or would that be a stretch?
Yeah, I think, and you mean like as far as raw data, or
Well,
as far as.
just I mean, as we're testing these bulls, let's just say over a 10-year time period, you're starting out with a 100K test, and you're getting as much data as you possibly can, and by doing so, you're selecting the genetics that maybe are higher performing across the board. So over time, kind of that process of selection and evaluation, does that get you to where you only really need X number of data because you already know that genetically speaking, those bulls are going to be higher quality across the board in those gene areas? Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And I'd say, maybe, I mean, I think we still have to be careful, and I would, liken this back to, and there's different ways that these genetic tests are incorporated into EPD packages, sometimes, a single step or a double step method. And so anyway, get way off into the weeds there, but some of those, like I'd noticed, 10 years ago, some of these Angus guys were getting a they were genomically or genetically testing, getting a raw numbered genetic score back, and so they quit taking, real weights and measures, for instance, and all. So, and that's it's really the genomics aren't any good without the raw weights and measures, and the raw weights and measures are better with the genomics. So I think, the more of everything we can use, the better off we are. And even, back to the 100K versus a 30K. I mean, in a perfect world, would we run a 100K or a 750K on all of them? Yeah. But by the time we go test, X number 100, it gets cost prohibitive. But yeah, I still think there's value in that. But for sure, there's more strength in the data with more data in the pool.
Yep, that makes sense. So I like to kind of open up a can of worms with this question because I've talked to commercial producers and seed stock producers about the reliability of genomically enhanced EPDs, especially compared to actual production performance of those animals. There's opinions all across the board based upon everyone's own experience. How reliable would you say that the genomically enhanced EPDs are compared to production expectations, and how much consideration should producers give to those when they're evaluating their bulls?
Sure. So I would say they're, and I think it's probably different. I think a little bit, breed association to breed association can be different. And your data is only as good as the members putting it in. I mean, because this all still goes back, a lot of this still, and that's where I think when we, maybe try to push people towards EPDs, they think we're ignoring actual production records, and that's quite the opposite. EPDs are just a reflection of that. So, but I would say for us, the EPDs we use through the International Brangus Breeders Association and what Angus bulls we may drag in, are very, very reliable. I would give you a different answer today than I would have given you 15 years ago, or even 5 years ago, maybe, on certain traits and different things. But no, I think they're very reliable. Are they perfect? No. But I mean, nothing's perfect, but they're very, very, I mean, they're very, very reliable. And as far as how much weight do you put in those in your selection criteria of bulls? I mean, I think, some of that depends on what your goals are, but I still think, balance is still the key. I mean, I think the best bull in the world with no EPDs is hard to sell, And the best EPD bull in the world that's hard to look at is hard to sell, So we still got to kind of balance the, so many producers still are selling their cattle visually and by the pound, So we still have to balance all of those things. So I, you know, if I'm looking at, if I'm buying bulls for, we get to buy a lot of bulls for people sight unseen through a program, and different guys. It's part of getting to know different guys and what their requirements are and what they're needing in their program. But one guy in Nevada, I may buy this type of bull for, and put more emphasis on phenotype than I did EPDs a little bit, because he's really got to have a bull that fits his environment. So the best EPD bull in the world, but if he's too big, too sheathy, too whatever, you know what I mean? It's not going to fit his environment. It doesn't matter how good his EPDs are. So I, versus, XYZ, maybe a guy in Missouri, has, more nutrition, behind him, more, potential, more, in terms of the grass or whatever. And so maybe we push the envelope more or whatever, but I still think it's a balance both ways, for me. I mean, I know there's a lot of programs that are almost straight EPD, and we're probably not, quite of that viewpoint. We're probably more of a, if I was going to slap a number, I don't know, I'm going to say 50-50, I guess, half phenotype and half EPD, if I'm probably picking my bull. And like I say, if one's really good and maybe lacking a little on EPDs, why, maybe it turns into 60-40 because I fell in love with him visually, but or may go the other way, but.
That makes a lot of sense. How Do you, is there a certain level of increased accuracy that you've seen on genomically enhanced EPDs compared to what it was 5, 10 years ago.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, no. I mean it's it's like having it's like that bull's already had 10 or 12 calves, or whatever, versus being a the actual yearling bull that he is. So yeah, no, there's sure more accuracy in what we're seeing, not only in that individual's performance, but then the performance of his progeny, and I think that's where a lot of these commercial guys are really grabbing a hold of EPDs and using them as they've used them just a little bit and then seeing them prove true. It doesn't take two sales pitches to get them convinced to use them next time. They know exactly what to use and how to use them. So.
So your earlier comments kind of walked right into my next question. There's a lot of data that producers have access to now that they're comparing, whether that be the genetic data of EPDs, whether that be the phenotype of that animal, the visual inspection, and looking at just true performance data of their lineage or their sire mates, heifer mates, whatever the case is, of what the animal's actually capable of doing in real life scenario. How can a producer, sorry, how can a bull buyer combine all of that information and make a good solid decision? What's the best process that you can recommend for utilizing all those tools in the toolbox and being able to make a solid, sound decision?
Sure. And I think for starters, I think we have to know where we're going, before we decide how to get there. So I think one, knowing kind of what your goals are, and that can come in a lot of different packages. If we're talking about, producers that are retaining ownership all the way through and retaining their own females back into the herd, or maybe it's a guy over here that's selling his calves off the cow the day he weans them, or so I think part of that starts with knowing what your individual goals are, and your goals won't be the same as your neighbor's goals, and it's important to remember that too, so if you see your neighbor at the same sale and he's buying this bull and you buy, that's okay because you're running different operations. So but I think I guess for me it all kind of gets back to balance. I mean, I think we've got to balance the EPD package. I mean, for us, as we're breeding bulls, as we're AIing cows, to sell bulls 2, 3 years down the road now, we want to notch as many of those EPD traits in the top 35% or better as we can. We're probably not into chasing, marbling into the top 1% and forsaking everything else. We want to hit all the marks we can hit. So that, I think we want to balance that EPD package, and we want to balance that phenotype, and I think we start at the ground up. I mean, that's one thing that we've seen and heard more comments on here in the last few years. People kind of starting to pay attention more to foot structure, and I think that's one of those things as we talk about analyzing these cattle phenotypically. Not only do we want one that's long and deep and stout and good boned, we really need to start with one that's good footed and that's got true square foot shape, and then work our way up from there. So I think balancing those things. And then I think the other thing is sometimes gets overlooked. We all get a lot of sale catalogs in the mail on bull sales here, there, and everywhere. But I think finding somebody that you can trust, that you can bounce, that you can call, that has a little knowledge of your cow herd, or you can converse, feel like you can converse and relate to them that way, and kind of digging into that seed stock producer's own mind and own knowledge of his cow herd, because honestly, that's where honestly where we see probably some of the best relationships we have with bull buyers, or guys that we've done business with for a long time. And whether they come buy bulls from us at the sale or we buy bulls from them and send them to them, we've got to know their cow herd, and we know what they need, and we've communicated that back and forth, and they trust us and we trust them, and man, it just sure works a lot better. So that's where I would say it's kind of like, if you're going, you want to trust your banker and your car dealer and whatever, you know, whoever you may be doing business with. It's the same with your a seed stock provider, so that you don't feel like you're buying a bull today and they don't even know your name tomorrow. So.
Yeah, that's a very good point. One of the things that I've been kind of inquiring about too in this is, given the amount of information, you're probably going to run across a bull that on paper looks fantastic, on foot, not so much, and vice versa. You got one that just looks like exactly what you want, but his numbers don't add up. What do you, and I like how you talked about, balance and finding something that kind of checks all the boxes in a moderate sense. But what do you tell someone who really, really wants to pursue something, whether it's phenotypically or genetically, and as a result, kind of has to sacrifice on the other end for that animal? How do you kind of approach that scenario?
Sure, yeah. And I think that, again, I think that goes back to kind of what their goals are. I mean, I can think of guys that, you know, guys that are, you know, there's sure guys that are more heavily weighted into the EPD thing. And so they will, you know, they'll sacrifice some phenotype for some EPDs and vice versa. So I think it's just, you know, kind of individual by individual. And I think, you know, typically we can figure it out pretty quickly, you know, that you know, if you and I talk about a bull in discussion and probably, you know, in the next 5 minutes, I can probably figure out that you're going to be more focused. You know, phenotype, walking out there and looking at him every day is going to be a little more important to you than what the paper says, or vice versa. You know, so I think we still, because at the end of the day, I mean, you're paying for your bulls and I'm paying for my bulls, so I want to like what I take home. You know, so that's, you know, at the end of the day, we want everybody, we want the customer satisfied, and if he's satisfied, why the rest of us are going to be fine. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is there a reason that you've kind of liked that 35% ranking versus even a 10 or just 25%? Kind of what's the mindset behind that?
I think just, you know, I think we get to pushing extremes sometimes. For one, it's hard, you know. I mean, if we could get them all in the top 15%, you know, that's exceptional, but that's also can get to be a little bit unrealistic. You know, it's getting more realistic all the time, but I think 35, I think we can get to pushing extremes sometime that are a little dangerous, you know. So yearling weight, for instance, you know, I mean, I would tell you, I don't need personally me, this is me personally. I don't need a lot of you know, cattle hitting that top 1-5% yearling weight, because when that yearling weight is that high, there's only one thing their mature weight's going to do, and that's going to go up, and so then my cow herd's going to get too big. You know what I mean? Or if I go to chasing ribeye, for instance, you know, we can, you know, there's a lot of focus and a lot of programs just purely chasing carcass. You know, if I go chase ribeye into the top 5% of the breed, my cow herd size, and I'm retaining females, my cow herd size is getting bigger than I want it to get, you know. So I think 35, you know, 25, I say 35, but I mean, that's kind of the mark we use, and we probably got more bulls, you know, probably 20-25% than 35, but I think 35 is kind of an attainable goal to mark, you know, 13, 15 traits into. And you know, so we're real literally sitting there on birth weight, weaning weight, yearling weight, total maternal, ribeye, marbling, scrotal, you know, and then some fertility indexes and things. So, because when you balance that all together, why, that's, you know, that's a lot of quality in one package. So,
Absolutely, yeah.
and can go a lot of directions. I think that's the other thing we see commercial guys needing all the time, is a bull that can do everything. You know, and they need to be cavanies with extra growth, plenty of maternal, plenty of carcass, plenty of fertility in them. You know, I mean, they literally, you know, for what, I mean, and if we're being straight with one another, for what these bulls are costing, you know, they need to do more than just one thing. You know, I mean, it,
Unless
we're
you
not,
just got a really a captive market in that one area.
yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, that's right. That or an oil well. So it,
Yep. For
yeah.
sure. What are some things that that you recommend bull buyers avoid when they're evaluating a bull, whether it is a phenotypical trait condition, a genetic red flag? What should guys kind of stay away from as they're doing their evaluations?
Sure. So, I mean, a couple things. I mean, I think when we talk about phenotype, you know, We may not all have the same taste in phenotype, but one thing we should all have the same taste in is that foot structure and leg structure. And so one thing I would never make an excuse for on a bull or overlook would be the foot and leg structure. You know, if we see feet that are curling, or you know, one that's already getting some fluid on his hocks, or maybe is a little too straight in his shoulder, or a little too straight through his rear pastern. You know, I would encourage people never to ignore structural flaws, because I don't care how good, you know, the EPDs may or may not be, you know, that's one that's probably going to come back to get you. And then another thing, you know, I think, and I think this is something we see, in pretty good shape most places, but you know, the scrotal circumference is probably one of those things that we've overlooked at times within this carcass race a little bit, you know. And some of these bulls that are just kind of, you know, one, know how your breeder's measured them. If you're reading a adjusted yearling, or you know, they're measuring them as full 2-year-olds or whatever it is, but making sure that you know, you're staying away from some of those kind of smaller scrotal, more infertile type bulls, especially if you're retaining some females back into the herd. But you know, and then as far as the EPD deal, I still, you know, I think the EPDs, depends on what your goals are. You know, if you're a straight terminal herd and you're retaining ownership of all your bulls, of your steers and your heifers, and you're buying all your replacements, and you want to chase yearling weight and marbling, why, rock right on. You know, go right at it. But if you're you know, if you're selling your calves as yearlings to somebody else, and somebody else is feeding them, and you're retaining all their sisters, or half of their sisters, or a third of their sisters as replacements within your herd, you probably don't need to chase that yearling weight, marbling and ribeye quite to the same extent. You know, there's probably some other traits to balance there. So I think kind of knowing what your goals are, and tailoring your selection to your needs, not necessarily what you know, maybe your neighbor's needs are, or maybe even popular opinion of the day. So.
Do you still see some producers getting kind of sucked into the trends versus really knowing what their needs are?
Yeah, but I don't, I think so. Yes, you do, for sure. And it's never intentional, you know. That's kind of sometimes the bill of goods that, you know, maybe the marketing is sold, or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's, and I go keep going back to the carcass thing, but, and it's not, I'm not anti-carcass whatsoever, but I, you know, I see a lot of guys with buying bulls and, you know, XYZ programs selecting carcass bulls that have never owned a steer in a feed yard, you know. I mean, and that's good for the next guy, because he's going to benefit from it. But you know, what is that, what's, you know, if you're selling your calves at weaning, did that get you, you know, did that get you to where you needed to get? So yeah, I think there still is a lot of you know, we tend to be we run cows and herds, and we tend to have a little herd mentality ourselves, you know. We see everybody leaving the movie theater, so we get up and go too, you know. So
It's another kind of this of a off tangent comment, but I have. I guess where was I going with this? Oh shoot, my mind just went blank on me.
just wait till you get to my age.
It'll come to me here in a minute, I'm sure. So I guess yeah, next question, then I guess I'll come back to that maybe. And this kind of morphs what we're talking about right here. But what's the biggest mistake that you see buyers make when they do only evaluate the genetic data, or they're only going to look at the phenotype? If they just don't want to combine the two, how can that play out as a mistake for them?
Yeah, sure. You know, one way I think it can play out is, you know, so if we're only evaluating the genetic information and not evaluating the animals phenotypically, and you're doing business with a seed stock producer that maybe doesn't have quite enough quality control, or, you know, you don't know very well, whatever it may be. I mean, I would say one of the biggest things I hear from guys, from customers that new customers that we get from somewhere else is the foot structure deal. Just got so tired of foot problems. And so anyway, and that's one thing we sorted bulls 3 days ago for a March sale, kind of the final sort, and I was really impressed with the foot structure we've got underneath these bulls, and I feel like we've always put a tremendous emphasis on that and continue to. And I think over time, you just you know it pays for itself. But there's a lot of those guys that still ignore that deal, or guys, seed stock producers trimming feet on bulls before they sell them. I mean, if you're a seed stock producer, or well, I shouldn't say that, but I probably am not buying bulls off somebody that's trimmed feet on them before they sold them, So I think selecting them solely on genotype without analyzing phenotype, foot structure is probably the thing that gets them first. I think it's, so then if we flip the cards, if we're only selecting on phenotype and not selecting on genotype, it depends a little bit on what they're doing with those bulls. But maybe it's you still hear a few of those guys say, well, I can pick a Cavanese bull by his head. Well, I mean, there probably were some good old cowmen that could, but I can't. So anyway, it, you probably you probably if you're only selecting phenotype and not genotype, you probably run into some disappointment on some weights, whether that's birth weight, whether that's weaning weight, whatever that may be. But well, I thought they'd be heavier than that because this bull looks like that. Well, what did his EPD say? So
That's funny. That's that
I didn't grow up a. I was probably always a phenotype guy first. Is my natural would I would say my natural place to revert back to, but I've really learned and. And that's where I feel like, believe and understand and believe and have seen EPDs work, that they are in the right programs with the right information behind them. They are true and factual and can move the needle in the direction you want to move it, whatever that may be, whatever trait, you might be after, or traits, set of traits. So.
Well, if you're like me and grew up in learning livestock evaluation at any level, whether it's judging or showing whatever else, you're just inclined to think that the best looking bull is gonna have the best performance, and
Right.
isn't always the case. But it makes it really, really hard when you've got a solid genetic bull that doesn't check all the boxes phenotypically. It's like this doesn't add up in my head.
Right. That's yeah, exactly right. Yep. And vice versa. I mean, we had a bull in our I can't remember if it was last spring. It was either the spring of 24 or the fall of 23, but a bull I remember we had in the sale. I mean, he was a good looking dude. Now, I mean, phenotype wise was near perfect and was probably, was an old cow, kind of an older cow family, and didn't have as much EPD pop and kind of setting the breed average basically on his growth traits. And brings I think brought like 2,500 below the sale average. You know what I mean? Just because, he does. I mean, and that's where our, I mean, I feel like we have a really good set of customers that appreciate the data and read it and trust it. And as a result, I mean that, and I, it, that, that's just kind of the, supply and demand there, if you will. So.
Yeah, absolutely. But I did think of the question that I forgot earlier. So, we've been taught here a lot lately about the importance of preparing calves for the future buyer, whether that be nutritionally, health-wise, helping the stock that we sell to work good for the person ahead of us, and kind of being, long-term in our beef sector conscious versus just what's going to make the most money for me. So I want to take a little dive into, with the concept of when you're going to market those calves. And I know that this is a separate decision from how you're going to raise those calves, but whenever you are looking at your marketing, how do you suggest that producers can consider what they need to be the most profitable animal for them from that genetic standpoint, with how are they going to produce those calves that are profitable for the person who buys them down the road?
Sure. And that's a so I sell bulls and run this marketing alliance, but a large part of my day also is involved in the feeder cattle business. And so we background buy and sell several thousand steers a year. And you know, that's a good question. I mean, the thing that, and I don't care who it is, the thing that can make all of us the most money is that they're healthy.
Right.
You know, so I mean, we can pack all the genetics we can pack into them and make them as good looking as we want to make them, or as high performing as we want to make them. And if they're not healthy, number one, if they're not healthy, and number two, if they're not represented, with what they were, you know, if you gave them 2 rounds of shots and they've been weaned for 60 days, you know, call it and say, I gave them 2 rounds of shots and they've been weaned for 60 days. If they've been weaned for 3 weeks and didn't have any shots, the worst thing you can do for the next guy down the road is say they've been weaned for 60 days. So I mean, number one, I would say from that aspect is health. And then number two, you know, leaving some good in those cattle for the next guy, condition wise, you know, not getting those cattle too fat, having them in a, you know, there's a fine line between getting one too green and getting one, kind of about half used up and too fleshy. So, you want to get all you can get out of them, but not, you don't want them too green. You want to maximize your end of it, but not you get all the goody out of them so that the next guy, you know, doesn't have any compensatory gain when he puts them on feed or grazes them or whatever he may be doing. So,
Absolutely.
and that's where I go back to the balance thing. I think if we're selecting these cattle, you know, it, we want at the end of the day, we want cattle that you can raise, that I can buy from you, that I can graze and make bigger, that then I can sell to a feed yard. And the feed yard will feed them and sell them to the packer. And at the end of the day, Texas Roadhouse down the road is packed full from 4:30 to 9, you know, at
Yeah,
night.
exactly.
And so I think if we're selecting those cattle, they're doing such a good job. I mean, I think the management in the beef business in general is so much better than it was 15, 20, 25, 30, 40 years ago. They know how to feed cattle. They know how to feed English cattle. They know how to feed continental cattle. They know how to feed Bos Indicus cattle. So I think I mean, it's amazing. And the number of days these cattle are staying on feed, you put that much corn in one, they're going to get to a, they're going to get to a highly acceptable, marbling score and carcass level. You know, we don't necessarily need, if we have a 50% prime rate in this country, we're going to see that prime premium disappear because the world can't afford that. You know, we need a tender, tasty product. And if we're selecting these cattle for balance and keeping them healthy all the way through the supply chain, at the end of the supply chain, the consumer is going to be happy, and it, nine times out of 10 will work pretty well for everybody else. So.
It's finding the fit for each sector of that business. And I think everyone in the industry could continually take lessons from the balanced approach. We've got to have cattle that excel in certain traits. There's no denying that. But I think there's so much value in raising an animal that in one way or another can do it all consistently. Going back to what you said at the very beginning of this conversation, if they can perform and be profitable for every person in the sector, to me, that's the most valuable animal anyone can raise and sell.
That's right. That's right. And we talk, you know, we hear a lot about carcass and talk a lot about carcass, but a lot of times, you know, sometimes the difference in those winners and losers in a feed yard is the one death loss or two cost a gain, you know. I
Right.
mean, those cattle that really can kind of go on and perform and you don't have enough stoutness and doability to them, you know, weren't too fleshy coming in, you know. I mean, if you can shave, if you can, you know, if you can bump your conversion and shave a little off that cost of gain, why that savings in feed, you know, goes a long ways towards towards the bottom line. So yeah, there's
Absolutely.
more than one way to you know, to accomplish the goal for sure. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think that too, you know, that kind of speaks to the question I originally asked, you know, of how do we select the animals that are going to perform for us while still, you know, being profitable for that next step. And like you said there, if we know as producers what we are good at, is that retaining heifers, is that feeding out cattle, is that just raising a calf till it's weaned? If we know what we are good at, then if we raise a calf that will continue to perform, everyone in the cycle is going to find benefit from that versus a calf that we didn't really do a good job of raising, but by golly, it sure hangs on the rail nice. Well, that's not going to benefit us as much as it will the person at the end. But if we take care of our spot in the chain and get that calf set up to continue going with balanced genetics and balanced opportunity, to me that seems to be the goal that we should all be pursuing.
That's right. And I think if you think about it like a pendulum, you know, and when we swing that pendulum all the way to the right side and let it go, where's it going to go? It's going to go all the way to the left side. And that's what happens when we select for extremes, you know, to me. And when you go back to that top 35% you asked me earlier, you know, I mean, that's probably you just can't help it. I mean, you select for an extreme, you breed extremes, you're going to get extremes. You know, we see it a lot in the Brangus business. We'll see somebody, you know, well, this cow doesn't have much navel. You know, she's really slick, she's really clean. So I'm going to breed her to a really sheathy bull, and it's going to come out just like I want it. You know, and no, it's not. You know what I mean? I mean, it may sometime. You know, if you flush that cow that way and have 10 calves, you have 10 bull calves. Why? There's probably three on one end, three on the other, and two in the middle. You know, or whatever it may. You know, however the math works out. But anyway, it. So anyway, that's where I think, you know, we don't want to swing that pendulum too hard, you know, one way. And I think, you know, I've heard some pretty large Angus breeders talk, you know, about how poor the meat quality was in the beef business, you know, 40 years ago. And that's a different story, you know, but I think it's important to remember we're not 40, you know, we're 40 years from then now, you know. You
Absolutely.
know, I mean, we've made vast improvements not only in the genetics of these cattle and, you know, the carcass quality and consistency of these cattle, but also you know, the functionality. So anyway, I think, you know, we're getting to the point that we do have a product that can kind of do it all, you know. And you think about carcass quality. You know, the fact that I heard a analyst yesterday kind of beating on Texas because the cattle grading in Texas were only knocking down like 65% choice on average. Well, crap, if you'd have told them in the panhandle of Texas 20 years ago they could be 60% choice, they'd be doing backflips, you know. You know, so I mean, I think, you know, we've improved the genetics. These feed yards have really improved the way they, you know, manage these cattle. I mean, they really micromanage them when they get out there. You know, I mean, if we send a set of cattle of a customer to XYZ feed yard that we know and have a relationship with, you know, I mean, they've got a playbook to dial those things in, you know. And so that, you know, all the way down the everybody's management, I think, as a whole from end to end has gotten better. And so that just, you know, helps, like you were talking earlier, helps everybody do a better job in their part of the supply chain, and then, you know, that makes a better product at the end of the day. So
100%. Very, very good insight and thoughts there. I really appreciate that. Cody,
Yeah,
is there
no.
anything else that you think we need to include or add to this conversation? I feel like we've covered a lot of really good bases and definitely have some great context. Is there anything else that you want to drop a note on?
Sure. No, I think we've covered a lot of it. And like I say, I think it still gets back to, to the people aspect and doing business with people that you know and people that you trust. And,
Yep.
I mean, it just there's no substitute for that. And whatever breed it is, whoever it is, find somebody that you can build a rapport with. And, we've got customers that buy one bull every 2 years, and we've got a customer that has never been to our sale. We've probably seen him 300 bulls
Oh
in the
my.
last I don't know, what's this, 2024, 2025. We've probably seen him 300 bulls since 2007 or something, and
Wow.
has never been to a sale, and so anyway, finding guys that can, that you have that, faith in, that, understand what your needs are and fit your program and stuff. So anyway, I think, don't ever, don't ever be afraid to seek out, try to build that rapport with whoever it is you're doing some business with, because it'll, at the end of the day, they've got a lot of knowledge that can help you, and vice versa. You've got a lot of knowledge that can help them. I mean, we'll learn as much or more about our bulls and what we need to be breeding from our customers as, we do anywhere else. Like, that's what Vern Soon, that works with us, says all the time. Are we breeding cattle we like, or are we breeding cattle our customers like? And so anyway, I think that's a good two-way street to have. So.
Very good point. Love that.